Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guests for this morning are Mike Keith and Mark Stevens. Mike is a Pulitzer Prize winner and a retired political cartoonist. Mark is a retired journalist and an acclaimed author. They will be sharing a story about friendship regarding their late friend, Gary Riley, who earned posthumous Colorado Bestseller Awards for his debut book series. Good morning, gentlemen. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you guys doing this morning?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having us.
Fantastic. I'm excited to learn more about your late friend Gary and the very special friendship you guys share. The book that I've read is Ticket to Hollywood. It's really wonderfully written. There's a lot of humor in it. It's adventurous. I feel like I kind of know Gary from that perspective. I think there's a lot of him in the book.
Yeah, there certainly is. There's not much difference between Gary and Murph.
Well, let us start by getting to know you guys a little bit better. So please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to present moment. And let's start off with Mark.
Great. Well, first of all, thanks again for having us on and shedding light on Gary Riley. Very quickly, I was born outside Boston. Not born. I grew up outside Boston. I was actually born in North Carolina. One key fact about me is I'm the son of two librarians. So I grew up in a world of books and reading. And as I grew up, I knew pretty early on I wanted to be a reporter. I spent nearly 20 years in journalism working for newspapers like the Christian Science Monitor, the Rocky Mountain News, and the Denver Post. Also produced television news documentaries for the McNeil-Lehrer NewsHour on public broadcasting. And then after about 20 years in reporting, went into public relations, working for school districts in Colorado, including Denver Public Schools. Also worked for the State Department of Education. And then 2 years ago, started my own independent freelance PR firm 2 years ago. And so that's pretty much the professional career. The only other thing I'd mention is that about 25 years or so ago, he started writing fiction and have published two novels, one in 2007 and the other in 2011, both mysteries based in Colorado. So that's a pretty quick overview or snapshot of my life.
Fantastic. How about you, Mike?
I was born in Northern California, but grew up in St. Louis. And I always liked to draw, but that wasn't my main interest. As I went to school, I was interested in science and math. And I started college, dropped out, was drafted into the Marine Corps. And then when I got out, I used the GI Bill to go back to school, where I completed the coursework for a doctorate in mathematics. And as a hobby, I was drawing cartoons for the school paper. And when I tried to get a job at a university, this was in the mid-70s, there was a recession going on. There was nothing available, and nobody was hiring in the foreseeable future. So I took a chance and sent my cartoons out, and the Denver Post ended up hiring me, and I worked there as an editorial cartoonist for 36 years. And I retired, took a buyout in late 2011, and with Mark, we formed a publishing company we'll hear more about later. And Mark should add that he and I have played in rock and roll bands together since the mid-90s.
See, I was wondering how you guys got together, you know, what the circumstances is in terms of bringing all three of you guys, actually, with Gary and so forth. So how did that happen, Mike?
Well, I knew Gary since the mid-70s when I first moved to Denver. And we were good friends, and we collaborated on a number of things, including a couple of animated films, one of which was shown in the Denver International Film Festival. And I knew Gary was interested in writing, and he soon entrusted his manuscripts to me, and so I read just about everything he wrote. And so later on, when I understood how deeply Mark was involved in writing, I introduced the two of them about, it's probably been 8-9 years ago now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the three of us would get together for coffee and talk writing and movies and art of a number of different forms. And it was a very close friendship all the way around.
That's fantastic. How would you describe Gary?
He was a loner. Very talented, funny guy, but he kept to himself. He was very generous with his skills. In fact, that's Mark was a beneficiary of that, as he'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But
he
read manuscripts from other writers. He offered help, and he would spend an inordinate amount of time, just unbelievable amount of just sharing his talents and insights into writing. Wonderful guy. Just a pleasure to be around.
I would
go ahead.
Can I just jump in there, Johnny, real quick?
Yeah,
I just would really like to underscore that point. I don't think it can be it's really hard to describe if you haven't met somebody like Gary, who was quiet in his own way, yet one-on-one or in a small group over coffee, the depth of knowledge, the depth of experience, the amount of time that he had spent analyzing what makes a story work or what made a movie come together or what made a movie fall apart or just really thinking through the storytelling process and understanding at a very deep, almost visceral level, what stories are all about. He really just... He was quiet, but once you're up close and personal with him, you could benefit from his decades of thinking about this. Very generous.
I looked at his pictures and I tried to kind of read people through knowing and seeing their portrait and so forth. And in putting together the promo, I have to tell you this. I mean, it's amazing what you just said, because I can see how he may be a quiet person from an outside standpoint of view. He might be an introvert, but he's a thinking person. He analyzes everything, and in many, many ways, he has a very unique perspective on a lot of things that's happening around him. And to be able to write the story of Murph, for example, you observe, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was a very keen observer. Somebody who could just break down those moments in life, and I think some of the beauty of the whole series is to kind of slow the world down. Murph has this wonderful way of just examining every situation seeing what's happening around him and being able to capture that in prose. And I know for a fact Gary had the same ability, and when you'd meet for coffee, and that's pretty much all we would ever do, he slowed the world down. You just wanted to linger and sit there and think about the things he wanted to think about all day. He just really had a very keen eye.
Well, I'm sure you guys do a lot of people watching, too, in some ways.
Absolutely. That's what writers do, I think. Writers are vacuums, vacuum cleaners. They take up everything around them and figure out if there's something they can use. So, yep.
Yeah, what I liked about his observations were both Gary and the character Murph, he would challenge the conventional wisdom. People take things for granted. I mean, even the smallest things about, why would somebody pay X amount of money for a good meal when they could cook a hamburger at home or some sort of thing like that. He took the mundane and turned it on its head and made you laugh.
Well, we take things for granted. For example, I mean, friendship. Let's talk about friendship, for example. I mean, you guys obviously had the camaraderie of meeting, whether it's once a week or every other week or how often where you guys meet. But the fact that a lot of us out there take things for granted, especially in this situation where obviously he passed on in 2011. But I think I'm sure there's a different sense of appreciation in terms of the moment spent together.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I agree with what Mark said, that time would slow down in Gary's presence. He was a guarded person. A lot of his, I think, his darkest, most innermost thoughts, maybe we never gleaned. I'm not sure. What we saw was a very thoughtful guy who was funny and got a laugh out of everything, just even the simplest things.
This is really, to me, just really the heart of the matter, and I really appreciate your putting the spotlight on the issue of friendship.
Yeah.
Because, and you mentioned early on, Johnny, that the similarities between Gary the writer and Murph, the main cab driving character, this is one of the chronic struggles I think that Gary had, and he made sure that his main character Murph had the same struggle, which was, am I part of the human circle out there? Am I part of civilization, or am I a loner? And there's a constant struggle throughout all the books between Murph wanting to just keep his little world going versus the feeling and the sort of human tug of being part of a larger endeavor, of being part of a larger group of people that are trying to make the world a better place or just make sure that it runs the way it's supposed to run. And Murph is constantly being pulled into situations where he has to get entangled in a bigger world. And to some extent, I'm sure, never having asked Gary this directly, but I'm sure Gary struggled with this too. And just how much do I enjoy my own time by myself writing books versus how much do I go out and really participate in the world?
And I think that's part of the genius of the Murph character is that he represents that dichotomy in extremis, where most readers, though, they can identify with that. We've all felt that moment of alienation in our lives many times, but, you know, it has probably hasn't consumed most of us. You know, it's a factor of humanity that you have this. And he is focused on that aspect of being a human being, and you recognize that when you read Murph's observations. It's a very valuable and entertaining part of the character.
Well, what I see also is that he's just an ordinary guy, and I can relate to certain aspects of what he goes through in life, and I can certainly relate to what Murph goes through by just observing people's behavior.
Right. Exactly. And he is an ordinary guy, and he has, I think the one of the appealing and charming things about Murph too is he's really reduced this whole issue of need versus want to a very very simple level, and Murph realizes that he doesn't need much to keep going. He like Mike said, he questions everything. What more do I need than a hamburger for dinner? What more do I need in terms of entertainment than Gilligan's Island? What more do I need in terms of income than just enough to pay rent and make sure I can go to the grocery store? It really breaks it down. Even thinking about work, do I really need to go to work or do I just have to? Is this something I just am required to do? And in fact, he recognizes there is a need there. He puts up with work in order to get the income he needs. At the same time, however, and this is where the dichotomy comes in, I think underneath in the subtext of all of this is a very human desire to connect and to be around other people.
Is Gary in real life successful in connecting with others?
I think one-on-one he was. Mark and I have noted many times when we've done public readings and so forth, that we'd have a crowd in a room and we'd comment that, you know, if Gary were alive, he would not be here today. You know, he wouldn't be in this room. He'd be off somewhere else. So he was very warm and generous and close one-on-one, but he was not big in social groups and organizations. The higher level gatherings and, you know, kind of the social life in America.
Very interesting.
I agree. Yep.
It's not about what one has and what one doesn't have. It's what one does with what they have that's important here.
Right.
And obviously he has a tremendous talent in writing and expressing himself from that perspective, whether it's within himself or sharing his work with others. So let's talk about how this process of publishing his work got about. I mean, that's fascinating as well, because the fact that nothing happened while he was alive, but everything happened after he left us.
Right. I can talk about that a little bit. I can tell you that after Mike introduced me to Gary, and I had been writing fiction for quite a while and had been out there networking. I'd queried agents. I'd talked to editors. I've made friends in the writing community. I really believed I was the opposite of Gary in terms of all that. I loved going to conferences and meeting other writers and finding out about, you know, who was looking for books, who was buying books, what agents were hungry. And I really tried to get Gary to step up into that world that I saw, where I knew a lot of writing friends who became successful because they networked, because they met people. And occasionally I would get Gary rolling in terms of maybe writing a query letter to an agent, or I think I got him to one workshop at one point, but it just wasn't in his genes. It wasn't in his DNA to be out there rubbing elbows with folks like that. So he would query, he would wait for the response come back. There'd be a generic form letter back from an agent, occasionally a personal note saying that they like something that they saw, but they were going to decline on representing Gary's works. Mm-hmm. And by this time, I had read over 20. I mean, Gary left behind, we think it's 24 or 25 novels in all.
Mm-hmm.
11 are about Murph, and there's another dozen or so about a variety of things, including two amazing Vietnam novels, because Gary had been a military police officer in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just saw so much potential here, but I could never get him to do the full court press, to really get out there and do it. And then I guess I'd like Mike to pick up this part of the story, because when Gary got sick, Mike approached him. And
You know, toward the end of his life, he suffered from colon cancer for close to 2 years, I would guess. Mm-hmm. But toward the end of his life, I sort of tag team with Mark on trying to get Gary to really consider publication in any form. If he if it wouldn't work in the traditional ways, why not? You know, the whole publishing world is changing, and
that's right.
This would be an opportunity for him to get his work out there. And he started to come around to that idea, and but he didn't really pursue it. But toward the very end of his life, he sent an email to Mark saying, you know, I'm ready to do this. And I think he probably died within weeks of that.
Yeah.
So at the funeral, I spoke to the gathering, and I said that I had learned that in Gary's will, which was remarkably brief given what a prolific writer he was, there were only three sentences in his will. And one of those sentences gave Mark and me permission to pursue publication of his work. And in front of his family and friends at the funeral, I vowed that my friend Mark Stevens and I were going to make this happen. And we got to work right away on it. We decided we would do the whole thing ourselves. And we formed a publishing company, and we're all set to launch the first novel in January of 2012, The Asphalt Warrior. And just by happenstance, Mark was at a reading of one of his novels and met a woman from Bigger Publishing in Boulder. And that's a legit outfit, legit publishing company. And they started chatting about Gary and our project, and she wanted to see the books. And she took them back and shared them with her editor at Big Earth. And I think it was just within days, Mark, isn't it? They read them, got back to us and said, we want to be in on this. And so we formed a partnership with them.
Yeah.
The quality of what Gary left behind was so good that a publishing house that had been around for 30 years read the first couple of books in about 3 days and just said, what can we do to help? I mean, they recognized the talent and the voice and the quality that was there.
Right.
So it was a real endorsement for the fact that we felt like we were correct, which Mike has read a million books. I've read 900,000, and you know, we knew Gary was a good writer, and without question.
Yeah.
And so to have a major publishing house, you know, they have 7 or 8 imprints within them, and some of them are fairly well known. These are a couple of very talented women in the publishing industry, Linda Doyle and Myra Parizo, and they said, we love Murph. What can we do to help? So off we go.
So to pick up then, so we abandoned our January 2012 launch so that we could take advantage of vigorous publicity machine, including being in on their spring catalog. So we got wider exposure by doing that, and it only postponed the launch of Asphalt Warrior by about 6 months. So that was the first novel. It was published in June of 2012, and it made number 2 on the local fiction bestseller list right out of the chute.
That's fantastic. What I could tell from what I've read in the second book, you have a character that's basically surreal, and it talks about real connection in the end. You know, we're people. It doesn't matter what we do or what we're involved with, because there's a connection, there's a people connection, and I think people relate to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And this struggle that the Murph character has, that Mark ably described earlier, It always boils down to this in these novels. Murph's character vows not to get involved in the lives of his passengers. He will not do it. But that's what drives every book. He can't help himself. He's a generous human being, and he wants to help. And he ends up, against his better judgment, getting embroiled in some situation that started in the back seat of his cab.
Yeah,
how
exactly?
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that's exactly it. That's the ongoing struggle. That is it right there. Yep.
You guys know him well. What life experiences influenced Gary's writings most?
Well, I'd say he was influenced by the Beats, Kerouac. And I read some early stuff, including a description of his sister's wedding that he wrote years before I met him, and it sounded like something that Kerouac had written. It was a sort of on-the-road type thing, but he was always a leader. He always envisioned himself as a writer. And, the 25 books, manuscripts that we have, that doesn't even touch the stuff that he threw in the trash can, you know. So he was always dedicated to writing, and he was an omnivorous reader. He read everything, all kinds of things. He liked pulp fiction, and he was reading Proust at the end of his life. Mm-hmm. So he was all over the place, influenced by and enjoying writers of every stripe.
And I would say also he, as Mike mentioned earlier, he cared about art on so many different levels. And when you stop and think back about Gary, who wrote and wrote for years and years and years, you stop and think about this desire, a very human desire to express yourself. And so we talk about Gary and we sit back and try to psychoanalyze him as friends and people who've been around him. And I think, we can come close to imagining what made up part of his being. Nobody will ever know what it's like to have been Gary Reilly exactly. But here's this very human desire to express yourself. And I know Gary knew that all that he could leave behind on this earth was art. That was all you would ever be known for. And he understood that, and he I so admire and just respect from my deepest part of me the fact that that guy went to his computer or his writing tablet, whatever it was, every day for many, many years to capture another character's human experience and try to relate to the rest of the world what Gary saw and how he viewed the world. And I just really, as much as he might have been a recluse, and I think he's one of the smartest, absolute brilliant people I've ever been around, his insights and his ability and willingness to share those insights through MRF and some of the other works that Mike mentioned that will be coming out, there is a richness that I would say does get up there with Proust or Dickens in terms of really capturing that essential human existence.
Yeah. What I got from just reading the one book is the fact that there's a generous amount of insights well weaved into a work of fiction, but then we all read books differently, what we want to get out of it. We want to be entertained. It's just one of those things that, okay, no big deal. It's just a fun, nice story. But at the same time, if you sort of engage the book from a standpoint, well, what can I learn from it? What can I get out of this that is worth my time in terms of above and beyond being just entertained by a good story, then you look at it from a different angle.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Gary was well aware that, you know, readers approach books in different ways, just as you say, and he served the complete audience in that regard. The stories are funny. If you breeze through them, you'll laugh on every page, and you'll be entertained. It'll almost be like, you know, watching a stand-up comic work. But if you read a little deeper, you'll get something else out of it. And it was his brilliance that he could weave all of those things together. And he was remarkably good at misdirection. He'd start a paragraph, and you'd think it was going someplace, and then at the very end, the last comment, usually an observation by Murph, will just come out of left field, and it will be one of those kind of things that surprises you, but then when you think about it for a second, it's inevitable that this character would have come to that point of view.
Very interesting. Well, Mark, can you give us a quick synopsis of Murph's characters in all the three books, in his adventures, so to speak, and I'm sure the character evolves himself.
Yep. As Mike pointed out, there's sort of a pattern to these books, and there's various subplots that happen in each, but the main theme of the first book in The Asphalt Warrior is Murph gets to trading, well, not trading, he gets approached by one of his fares who runs a barber shop to follow his wife. He thinks his wife might be having an affair. And this immediately sets up in Murph this chronic tension because the barber is offering Murph a large sum of money, far more than he would make in the course of a week of driving around, to do something that should be fairly simple, which is to simply follow somebody. So this leads Murph deep into this relationship, and of course there's other subplots going on. In fact, one very funny subplot has to do with Murph needing to get his eyes checked because his cab license requires it. Another has to do with Murph's very simple decision as to whether to take advantage of a free haircut coupon that this guy has given him. And in the first book, really, we get to know Murph's whole world, his Crow's Nest apartment, his interest in Gilligan's Island and other TV shows, the fact that Murph hides his proceeds from his daily cab driving in a copy of James Joyce's Finnegan's Wake, because he knows that's the one book in the house that no burglar would ever steal. And that's sort of a joke for readers and writers, because everybody knows it's a very, very hard book to read. He had he had, by the way, previously been hiding his money in the copy of Lolita by Nabokov, but that book kept disappearing when he'd have his friends over. and then he stopped having friends over. But so that's basically The Asphalt Warrior. The plot is very straightforward and ends in around a racetrack, and I won't go into a lot of detail about how it ends. In the second book, he takes a young woman who's on her way to a film festival, and she's going to a showing of The Great Gatsby, and she's all dressed up like a flapper. Because this is part of what the showing of this of The Great Gatsby, they've suggested that people wear outfits appropriate to go with the movie. He drops her off at the theater and then later realizes that she had left her, well, I can't remember if it was a wallet or a purse, but enough behind that Murph knows who she is and then later tries to go find her to return it. And, of course, she goes missing, so Murph becomes a subject that the police want to talk to about her disappearance. And then that leads him into this whole screenwriting family. It leads him to a chance, I think, one of the most touching and beautiful scenes Gary ever wrote, when Murph goes out to Hollywood and walks around the streets of these beautiful houses in Hollywood and thinking about all the screenwriters out there, because like Gary, Murph was also a struggling novelist and a wannabe novelist, and a lot of the any readers out there who love good fiction but they're also writing, you'll recognize a lot of really colorful commentary in the books about the struggles to become a published writer. And in the third book, one of Murph's fares hands him change one day, and on the $5 bill, I think it's a $5 bill, is this very cryptic note written in this neat printing block letters. And Murph is not sure if the message is for him personally or if it's just a random $5 bill. But, of course, being Murph, he has to contemplate this at great length, and then has another encounter with the same passenger, the same fare. And, of course, there's another message. And I would just say events progress from there. And the next thing we know, you know, he's deeply entangled in this individual's life. And, again, the cops are around. So it sounds kind of dark. The Heart of Darkness Club is the third book. And it sounds kind of dark, but, again, very played for light and warmth.
Absolutely. And another thing, you know, Johnny, you mentioned the character development. I think what happens in the arc of all these novels is the character development is minor in a way. However, there's a buildup of history that occurs from one novel to the next, and there are references to earlier events that, if you just pick up a book at random, like you read the second novel without reading the first, there were references to things that happened in the first, but they're so subtle and neatly woven into the narrative that you don't feel like you've missed anything. However, for those who read the books in order, there's a cumulative effect that just makes you feel like you really know this guy really well. He becomes a close friend of yours. There's an editor at the Denver Post who's read all of them so far, and he says it feels like, to him, like he's not even reading. He's sitting in a bar next to this cab driver who's just talking on, and he's fascinating, and he just doesn't want the evening to end. He just wants to hear what Murph has to say next. That's the feel you get reading these novels, I think.
I thought of that as I kind of understand the way how this story developed and so forth. I noticed that these books are actually journals in some ways. Gary's personal journal about his life and how it has evolved. It's a process of transference. Like, say, we put ourselves into words, and of course we have our avatar. And you can see the development, the growth, the personal growth that one goes through, and the observations about real life, real situation. That's a sort of a Monday morning quarterbacking, so to speak.
That's exactly right.
Gary channeled a lot of his experiences through Murph, I'm sure. But the only distinction between the two is Murph talked a lot about writing novels and referenced his efforts. Gary really, really worked at his craft. So that was the only major difference that I would spot.
Sure. Yeah, it's funny. I can't remember a single scene in any of the Murph novels where Murph actually sits down and starts banging out words. You know, he sits at his typewriter. He starts to do it, but he always finds something to distract himself. Mm-hmm. He never gets anything done. Although in his past, the character has a steamer trunk full of bad manuscripts, he says. You know, his bookshelves are made from stacks of manuscripts, you know, with boards in between them. So he's got the same past that Gary had. And the other thing it's kind of fun, too, is if you've known Gary as long as I did, for example, he worked for a short time at Remax writing brochures and booklets for their agents. And he hated it, but it paid the bills. And that whole experience and that part of his life reappears in the Murph novels as DynaCorp, you know, and the things that he went through there appear. You know, I have a photograph of Gary and me both wearing tuxedos at some Remax event, you know, which was hilarious because both of us seemed really out of place. And that was the Murph character, too. In addition, Gary did drive a cab for a good long while. So he had that experience, sort of the inside baseball world of cab driving.
That's interesting. One of the things that what the character got to me in the sense that when you talk about all this and, you know, it validates my feelings. And Mark, you realize this as well. I mean, you're an author as well, and you understand that the insecurities that we go through, that some of the things that we wrote is not good enough. And I'm sure, Mike, you understand, too, some of the cartoons that you drew that you realize, oh, my God, well, let me start all over again.
That was almost a daily experience. Yeah.
So we sort of connect from that standpoint of view, and I'm sure the uniqueness about Gary's situation is that he has an opportunity now. I had this opportunity to put it on paper. I can express all my fear, my doubts, and my insecurity in a nice, healthy way. But ironically, that's his best work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, it's what touches people. It's that common experience we all have. And that's what makes, you know, any book good, even if it's a fantasy book, which Gary wrote a couple of those, too. he could write anything.
Very interesting. Well, Mike, let me answer this. What would you like for the readers to gain from reading Gary's books?
Well, an appreciation for the character and the writer. And you know, it's... You know how hard it must be to deliver good stand-up comedy, how seamless it is. If you ever tried to do it and stand up on stage, you have a sudden appreciation. My son tried this out not long ago, and you have a sudden appreciation for the craft. And the and what's great about Gary's craft is it doesn't rear its head and say, hey, look at me. It's seamless. You're completely sucked into these books. And when you read them, you come away with your head cocked a little to the side, looking at the world in a slightly different way. And boy, what more can you ask of a book? You know, the insights that he has and the humor and don't take things too seriously. That's that was all part of Gary and all part of Murph, and it's a good prescription for life, I think.
If I can jump in there, too, I would just say, you know, pick up these books if you want to experience a very refreshing point of view about life. So many books are, you know, copies of each other, and you've seen the same story and the same protagonists and the same main characters.
Right.
You know, here we have a very unique main character, a cab driver, who has completely processed life in a different way than anybody I've ever met or read about. He really views life from a very granular, simple level. I've always described him as kind of an antidote for our times, because he doesn't want everything that everybody else seems to want. He doesn't need to accumulate a lot. He really just understands his needs, and he keeps his life basically scaled to his needs.
Yeah, it's almost as if, you know, he's like an ascetic, almost like a holy man in a way. And it was interesting that one of the early readings we had, there was in the audience, there was a professor, a religious studies professor from Regis University, who raised his hand and commented on the fact that he thought Murph was an anti-consumerist. and it's true, he is. Although, you know, Murph buys lottery tickets and kind of muses on what he'd do if he'd win. But there's something almost like a holy man about the character, you know, leading the simple life. This is the prescription for happiness, is leading as simple a life as possible.
Interesting. I get a lot of the energy that came into the book actually came from the experiences of engaging others. Because, like you say, the character engages others and observe and tell us about things that we don't pay attention to. It's strictly from an observation perspective.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And yep. I mean, I think that's the goal of good writing. And you know, there are a lot of books published out there, but there's not a lot of good writing.
I think that goes back, Johnny, to what you were saying. I think that really... It, you know, hits on your theme that here was one person, Gary, who found a way to express himself, as I've said before. And so he was not only taking in life differently, he was finding a way to communicate that experience. And I agree with you completely. He really found a way to capture and slow down the world and see it from a unique perspective and understand that it's unique. What to me, what's so strong about these books is that Gary recognized that his point of view was different and that that's okay.
Right.
He wasn't trying to write a book that, because he read a James Bond book, and I know Gary loved Ian Fleming, he didn't say, I'm going to sit down and write a book that's going to mimic you know, one of the Goldfinger or something. I'm going to write my point of view, and I'm going to develop this character, and that's good. And he recognized that that's good, and he poured his heart and soul into it.
I'd like to add about, you know, what readers take away from his books, this little story. My son, who was in college at the time, was a huge fan of Gary's works, and he would get early manuscripts, you know, that Gary had given me, and I'd pass them on to him. And he and his girlfriend would sit up all night and read them aloud to each other. And I kind of joked that his grades suffered because of that. But my son was sort of a kindred spirit, and he's very similar to Gary, and thought of him as a part of the family, really.
Very interesting. Well, the book certainly expressed life is humorous. And of course, things may happen, and the moment it happened may not be humorous at all when you look back in life.
Yep. Yeah, they say humor is tragedy plus time.
Right. I agree with that. Where can someone go to buy the books and get more information about Gary and keep up with the latest happenings?
Yeah, the website is theasphaltwarrior.com. The books are available on Amazon. They're available on Kindle. They're available through Barnes & Noble. They are available. They're nationally distributed through all the major book distributors. And that's, again, thanks to our partnership with Big Earth Publishing in Boulder, which has been around for about 35 years or so, very well known. But I would also recommend that potential fans look for The Asphalt Warrior on Facebook. There's daily postings there. And also on Twitter, Asphalt_Warrior. On Twitter, and there's lots of activity on a regular basis on both those social media sites.
Yes, it's interesting. We've got the Gary Murph has followers in London, cab
mm-hmm.
drivers in London, cab drivers in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow he's gotten around a bit.
Yeah.
Well, they can relate to him. Stan,
yes, they can.
I'm sure you guys sometimes when you were driving your family around. If you were just to sit quiet and they think you're listening to the music, but actually you're observing them
yeah,
in the
exactly.
back seat or the side of you, and that's life. That's story, if
that's
you think about
that's
it.
That's it.
And a cab driver is a perfect vehicle because, or so that's, I guess, a bad pun, a cab driver being a vehicle, but, you know,
yeah.
the cab driver's like a bartender. The whole world is going to pass by at some point and
right.
crawl in the back seat. So you just, it's random. You never know what's going to happen on any given day. You might have a famous movie star. You might have somebody who desperately needs a ride and doesn't even have enough money to pay for it.
Right.
You know, Murph often talks about the pros and cons of what he calls jumping bells, which is to answer specific calls for a cab at a residence in a neighborhood versus waiting in line at the Brown Palace in downtown Denver and just seeing who comes out the door. But, you know, at the Brown Palace, he knows he's going to go probably to DIA, to the airport, but he doesn't necessarily know who he's going to take. And
mm-hmm.
he's constantly thinking about the randomness of his experiences and what's going to happen.
And I tell you what, the thing about it is that people don't understand. This is a social thing, though, because we actually, when I say we, I include everyone, including me sometimes, and when we're in a hurry like that, we don't really respect a whole lot. When I say respect, it's not that you're being disrespectful, but you look at the cab driver as a thing. And there's a lot
right.
of times when we don't get from point A to point B, we take our anger out at the driver.
Right, right.
So it's amazing. You don't realize the things that you do. And, you know, the gentleman over there or the gentlewoman over there is just absorbing all this thing in the story of our lives.
Yep. Yep. And just going right into that whole service issue of, you know, just the service class that's out there. And
mm-hmm.
I think Gary gave a complete portrait of a very smart cab driver who probably was taking in more than anybody, even the corporate executives
right.
that he was, you know, bringing around. He was Murph gives humanity to the service class for sure.
No question about it, and it's a statement about respect. We may not
mm-hmm.
be in certain levels of whatever you want to call it in terms of a social level, but don't forget, I'm a human being, and I'm probably as intelligent as you are, if not more.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Completely agree. Good point, Johnny.
What's next for the series, Mark?
Well, in November, we are double publishing the next two volumes. In fact, we just set the launch date of November 21st for the fourth book, which is called Home for the Holidays, in which Murph travels back to the home, the family situation in Wichita, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fifth book will also come out on the same day. And that one is called Dr. Love Beads. And in Dr. Love Beads, Murph has to infiltrate a hippie commune in Boulder, again, because one of his passengers has led him to this situation. And I've been looking forward to the publishing of Dr. Love Beads since we started. It's the first four books are really, really good. And, you
mm-hmm.
know, everybody's got their favorite. But Dr. Love Beads, to me, really picks the action and the humor up another notch, which is hard to believe, but it's true. And then after we publish these next two, we don't know the schedule yet, but we're eager to get them all out.
Wonderful. And let me ask you this, since we talk about that, how has the success of Gary's book impacted you personally?
It's been incredibly gratifying. It's like this is a labor of love for both of us, and
mm-hmm.
to have the success that we've had so far, especially the critical success.
Mm-hmm.
All three books made the bestseller list. The second book was a finalist for the Colorado Book Award, so it justifies Mark's faith and my faith in Gary's writing, and it's terrific. And you know, his family and friends are really grateful to us. And it, you know, it's the best good deed I've ever done in my life.
Wow, that statement just really chokes me up, Mike. And I have to agree. It is so easy to work on this project. And it's because of the reaction of a variety of friends, from my daughters who are 17 and 21 to casual acquaintances who have emailed back to say, that is one of the most beautiful books I've ever read. And it just floored me, to getting little, I manage the Asphalt Warrior Twitter account, and just getting little comments from strangers here and there saying, thank you and well done. You know, it just really means a lot. When Gary's book Ticket to Hollywood was a finalist for the Colorado Book Award, the Denver Post wrote a beautiful little piece about Gary and this whole effort. And clearly, the person who put it together was the entertainment editor at the Post. And he just raved about the quality of Gary's voice and the quality of Murph as a character. And just getting that kind of validation out there just tells me what I've known all along, and I think what Mike's known all along. This guy was a very serious artist who knew what he was doing.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Is there any other collaboration in the works for you two?
This project here is going to take years to come, because not only are we going to go through the whole 11 Murph novel series, but we intend to at least publish his Vietnam novels. So that's we didn't expect that we were going to do this, but we expanded our reach a little bit and published another author just this past spring, Barry Whiteman. Wrote a terrific, funny reflection on 1970s rock and roll and the beginning of the internet culture that is, you know, we couldn't say no to. And it seems to be doing really well, too.
Wonderful. What would you say to aspiring authors, Mark, who just started out in the business? Because like your friend Gary, obviously he has his issues in terms of being very open in terms of approaching publishers and so forth, and thanks to you guys, Gary will always be remembered for his wordsmith. But how about aspiring authors out there? What advice can you give them?
Yeah, what a great question. First of all, one part of my answer would be Gary's biggest strength of all, and then we'll get to his weaknesses, but I would definitely say Gary's strength was rewriting, and he could write. He would sit and think about his stories over and over and over again. And the reason I know he could do that is he did it for me. My first two novels would not have been as good as they were, nor as well received as they were, had Gary not had his hands on them. And he probably read my novels as much as I did. He'd read them 10 times a dozen. I'm not sure, but occasionally, weeks down the road, he'd send me an email. What if you did this? What if that happened? He really believed that you could make things better on an ongoing basis. So to writers out there, always be open to rewriting and open to credible, thoughtful commentary from people you respect, which I did respect Gary. And I know we're probably winding down on time, but the other quick thing I would say, Gary's weakness, I mean, that was just part of who he was. He couldn't get out there and network, but I would say in this day and age, given the crazy, crazy world of publishing, the friendships and relationships that you're going to make by going to conferences, by meeting with other writers, going to writers' groups, really getting involved, you're going to probably get that one little introduction that will make the difference. It's very hard to sit at home and just send out query letters unless the stuff is just extraordinary, and even then you might not get over the hump. So I would recommend making friends, finding credible friends who will read your material and give you honest feedback, and just putting yourself out there. It's a hard thing to do, but it's just part of the way the business runs these days.
Fantastic. Well, we got a couple of minutes left, and we're coming close to the end of the hour. Since this show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living for our listeners this morning? Mark, let's start with you first.
Well, I'm going to go with my father's line. This is really simple. This is the creed he lived by, or the message he lived by, and it's simple. To have a good time, give a good time. And it's really a simple thought, but if you want to have a good experience, make sure you give a good experience. And I've tried to live by that as much as I could.
Fantastic. And how about you, Mike?
I'm going to sign up for Mark's recipe for living. I like that a lot. And I would think that the recipe for living that Gary offers about mm-hmm. simplicity and finding joy in simple things is a very good one and profound. It's easy to say, but it's profound.
Fantastic. Well, gentlemen, thank you for the great recipes for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Amy Newmark. She is the publisher and editor-in-chief for Chicken Soup for the Soul. Amy will be sharing some incredible stories of resilience that will empower you from Chicken Soup's latest book titled From Lemon to Lemonade. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Mark, Mike, thank you again and have a blessed day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.